Hello and welcome to the Thursday, February 23rd edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city. We've got a great show. Marion Cole will be in the studio. We'll be talking about her new album, which is released tomorrow. And then Jim Powell will be here from the UAS School of Management. We'll learn about the Girl Scout benefit event, the auction. It's happening this Saturday. And end with Nancy DeCharney with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Law enforcement officers arrested at least 10 people Wednesday during a short confrontation with those left in the former Ocheti Shikoi camp in North Dakota. Most of the remaining protesters, about 150 people, marched out of the camp on federal land, accompanied by singing, drumming, and prayers before the 2 p.m. deadline. The moment was captured in this live video feed by Honor the Earth. Among those leaving was Dan Nanamkin, who is Nez Perce Umatilla and Lakes Okanagan, and had been at the camp since September. He says leaving was a sad event.
We decided amongst ourselves, you know, we're going to peacefully remove. We're going to do so with dignity. We're going to leave with dignity and a respectful, prayerful way so we could have our heads held up high in regards that we did the best that we could, and there's no shame and leaving. So we took care of ourselves in that way.
Nanamkin says he has set up for now at the Eagle Nest camp and is deciding whether to stay on. Those leaving the camp set fire to as many as 20 structures, reportedly for ceremonial reasons. The Morton County Sheriff's Office reports two people were treated at the hospital for burns, although it's still unclear how those happened. A large contingent of officers in riot gear moved in about 2 hours later. They rushed a group of protesters, grabbed selected people, then retreated. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum said those remaining had another chance to leave Thursday without risk of arrest. State officials said cleanup would continue Thursday and anyone interfering would be arrested. North Dakota officials offered meals, short-term lodging, medical exams, and even bus tickets for protesters who left by Wednesday afternoon. Officials say only four people made use of those services. Construction on the pipeline has already resumed. Pipeline backers say oil could be flowing as early as March 6th. Native American leaders are among those hoping their communities can take advantage of President Donald Trump's promise to create millions of jobs. That was a key part of optimism expressed during an address by the National Congress of American Indians. Correspondent Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington.
With the president, a former CEO and businessman, tribal leaders are hoping he'll understand the needs in Indian country. Brian Cladisby, the president of the National Congress of American Indians, says the federal government could spur development in Indian country with a couple pen strokes.
Unlike every state and local government, tribes cannot issue tax-exempt bonds for economic development because the IRS only allows us to use them for public works.
Cladisby is also hoping for some broader tax reforms.
Not everyone realizes that most tribes cannot tax sales on their reservations because of the problem of dual taxation by the states. A few states have reached tax agreements with tribes, but for those, and the most part, the states enjoy taxing our reservations without providing services.
In Congress, the new chair of the Indian Affairs Committee, Senator John Hoeven, is planning to introduce the Indian Economic Enhancement Act.
It was introduced in the last Congress by then Chairman Senator Barrasso and featured an array of economic enhancement tools for Indian businesses. It's a good step in the right direction for investment and empowerment.
But Hoeven is also hoping Congress can include Indian country in a massive infrastructure bill.
And I hope we do. I think it's very important. It's important for our whole country. And we need to be at the table on behalf of Indian country when we discuss that infrastructure package and when we build that infrastructure package.
But some Republicans don't like the president's call for spending $1 trillion on infrastructure when the nation's in debt. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. VisionMaker Media is currently pleased to offer public media internships. You can find out more at visionmakermedia.org.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. As I said earlier, we're coming live at you from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He is at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And it is February 23rd, and it is sunny, high near 35, a glorious day today. Tonight it's going to be partly cloudy, around 22. Tomorrow back again, mostly sunny with a high near 38, and tomorrow night snow, mainly after 9 p.m., calm wind becoming east around 5 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation Friday night is 90%, so I guess we'll all be up at Eagle Crest on Saturday. So let's kick off the show. In the studio with Jeff and I is our very own Marion Cole. She lives here in Juneau. She is a musical artist, if you're not familiar with her. She has 10 albums, and the last one comes out Tomorrow, and it's called Standing Stones. Welcome to the show, Marion.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
So I have dubbed you kind of the Joni Mitchell of Alaska.
Oh, boy. That's quite a title. I'll have to work a few more years to earn it.
But. Well, I'm just a big fan of yours. I love your songs.
Oh,
you're a fabulous
you.
singer-songwriter. I love your lyrics, and I love your music. And it just kind of captures Alaska the way Joni Mitchell captures California for me.
Oh, thank you very much.
So let's hear about this new album.
I'm pretty excited about it. It's got a lot of the kind of clever, interesting, complicated chord progression, complicated lyrics. It's got a lot of the folk songs that I think I'm known for, the pretty acoustic guitar and stuff. But we also this time got to put in as many drums as I wanted. So there's a lot more drums, and there's a lot more electric guitars. So it's fun. I'm getting into the Don Juan's Reckless Daughter phase of Joni.
Oh, that's
so
fun.
I hope. Yeah.
I look forward to it. Actually, yeah. I did hear a clip. We're not going to share it yet, but we will share it soon. I did hear one of your songs on the URL for that?
Bandcamp is my place. Bandcamp is my online home. They're so great.
Right. And so I listened to it today, and it was really, really great. So let's talk about some inspiration for this new album. What? I mean, 10 cuts? How many?
11 cuts. Mm-hmm. 11 cuts. And the last few albums I've made have been very, very personal and sometimes very silly and whimsical and so on. And I just felt ready to do something kind of bigger and deeper. And it turned out that it was very appropriate for this winter. It's more looking outward. It's looking at the world around us. It's looking at the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we tell, the stories we are. I mean, that we are made of. I remember hearing a radio lab that said, really, all we are as conscious beings is memory combined with imagination. That's the only thing we have that makes us even exist as beings in time. And I was like, okay, that's where I'm going with this next record. So it's a song cycle kind of from birth through death. And it's about the things we all have in common and the things we all tell ourselves and the things we forget. And one of the themes is beggar, banker, king and pawn. We're only bones with stories on.
Oh,
and it's going to be exciting. I can't wait to release it. It's been a lot of work.
I bet. And then you're probably going on the road. You're going to release and hit the road?
I am. I'm doing a couple appearances out in Seattle to gather my resources and do a few shows. I'm coming back here for some shows, and then I'll probably in late summer I'm going to do some long touring. I'll have to I'll be gone for a while, but I think it'll be fun to go back to Europe, back across the United States and Canada, and bring the record with me this time.
That sounds great. And what are the Juno dates that you talked about? Where are you playing?
My next Juno date is going to be with in conjunction with MiniCon, and it's actually here. It's going to be at 360. That'll be for the Comic-Con we have here in town. It's on April 22nd. It's on Saturday in April. And I'll also be at Folk Fest, of course.
Yay.
Yes, I've applied for Folk Fest. I don't know what my time slot is yet, but that's one of my favorite gigs every year that I get to do it.
That'll be great.
Uh-huh.
So let's go back to the sound of this new album called Standing Stones, and we're going to listen to a cut in just a little bit. But it sounds like there were a lot of people involved with this. Is that true?
There were a lot of people. Laura Zahasky here in town played. I've got some friends from Seattle and Austin and L.A. and New York and Anchorage are all in the record. You know, I got to travel around and do some recording. I recorded the main body of work in Austin, which was fun because we had access there to vintage microphones and amazing preamps and just, like, really fantastic equipment, which was great. And in Austin, it's kind of a city where you can say, I think we need a baritone saxophone player. Do you think we can get one tomorrow? And you can, because it's Austin. And so there's just musicians, you know, climbing up the walls everywhere. They're all over the place. And so we got to have brass. We got to have strings. We got to record much higher quality vocals than I've gotten to do before with a really great microphone and some really great preamps. The snare sound we captured, I mean, it's like you can record something anywhere, but when you record it with the right microphones and the right engineers, oh my gosh, that snare sound. I could marry it if it were legal. It's amazing. I'm going to use it forever. I'm going to replace all my future snares in every project with it.
All right. Well, I guess we have to listen. So if you're just joining us, Jeff and I are talking to Marianne Call. She's a local singer-songwriter who's coming out with her 10th album. I personally christened her the Joni Mitchell of Alaska, and we're going to listen to one of the songs. She's very embarrassed by that. I think honored and embarrassed at the same time. And yes. We're going to listen to one of her songs from the new album called Standing Stones. Here we go.
We drew nine lines from east to west. We drew nine from north to south. Then we stitched our names in concrete veins through miles and miles and miles of ground. The solid rock, it does not care if we scratch our names, if we scab and tear, if we line and spine and grind it, if we dare to try. Stone just like so, to map the stars' ascent, to prove we understood the moon. We left circles where she went, the triangle unlocked for us to babble of our doubts, and then we wrangled fire and rocketeered our sticks back to the stars.
And we repent, 'cause we were wild and we were wrong, and this
Whoosh! That's Marion Call's a cut. That's a song, the lead song from the new album called Standing Stones, the song and the album.
Yes, it's, that's right. That's the title track and the first single.
That sounds great.
It's a little bit of a barn burner for me, yeah, considering I usually do mellow, folky, jazzy stuff. So.
And that's the snare she was talking about. So
yes,
it's a digital release, and tell us how this is rolling out.
We are doing, it comes out online tomorrow just on Bandcamp, because Bandcamp is the most artist-friendly website. If you're an indie musician in town, like I know Dan Kirkwood uses it, I know Wool Pullers, you know, a lot of the other musicians in town, we all love Bandcamp, because they're great. So it'll come out tomorrow on Bandcamp. You can find it on my website, mariancall.com, or at mariancall.bandcamp.com. And we're doing a first listen through tomorrow, first listen in the nation on KXLL at noon. And there's going to be people tuning in from all over the world for that. It should be fun.
Cool, the whole album.
Oh, yeah, the whole album and a couple of songs that inspired it.
Yeah, but you heard this, that song here first.
That's
here.
True, Kate.
Yeah,
yep,
Juno
you
Afternoon because of Jeff Brown. Marion, it's
thank
always
you,
a
Jeff.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in. It sounds like a great song, and I'll wait till noon tomorrow to get my copy.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
All right, bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 23rd of February, 2017. It was on this day, 1940, that Woody Guthrie, sitting in his hotel room at Hanover House in New York City, sat down and wrote the lyrics to This Land Is Your Land. The first mass inoculation of the Salk polio vaccine began on this date in 1954 at the Arsenal Elementary School in Pittsburgh. The year before, there had been 35,000 reported cases of polio in the country, and by 1962, after the vaccine came into general usage, there were 161. It's the birthday of George Friedrich Handel, born in Halle, Germany, in 1685. He saw that the music scene in London was much livelier and much more lucrative, and so he moved to London. He was just 25 years old, composed an opera, Rinaldo, in 2 weeks, wrote and performed for Queen Anne, who gave him a good salary. He became a British citizen shortly thereafter. Handel said, "What the English like is something they can beat time to, something that hits them straight on the drum of the ear." King George I wanted a concert on the Thames, and Handel composed his famous water music for him, King George riding in a barge and another barge carrying about 50 musicians and thousands of Londoners standing on the shore. When people were not so interested in Italian opera, which he'd been writing, Handel turned to composing oratorios. He composed Messiah in 24 days. When his music for the Royal Fireworks debuted, more than 12,000 people came to hear it. He lived in a rented house at 25 Brook Street in the Mayfair District of London, now the Handel House Museum, had no wife, no children, left most of his money to his servants and various charities. It's the birthday of Samuel Pepys, the famous diarist, born London, 1633. Father was a tailor. Pepys was the fifth of 11 children, went to Magdalen College at Cambridge, got a job doing various things for his cousin, Admiral Edward Montagu, and through his cousin's connections, he got a job as clerk of the Acts of the Navy, which gave him a nice annual salary. He started keeping his diary on the 1st of January, 1660. He made a New Year's resolution that he was going to do it. And thanks to that, we know a good deal about the plague of 1665, the great fire of 1666, and the coronation of Charles II. He also wrote about his own health and what he ate and his love affairs, gave up the diary in 1669, fearing that his eyesight was failing. And it's the birthday of John Camp, born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 1944, known by his pen name John Sanford, writer of thrillers, most of them set in Minneapolis and St. Paul. He said, "When people kill up here, it's not the chaotic street crime they have in Miami. We have these elaborate, cold-blooded murders that incubate in the winters." His next novel, Golden Prey, comes out this April. Here's a poem for today by Kirsten Dierking entitled Lucky. All this time, the life you were supposed to live has been rising around you like the walls of a house designed with warm, harmonious lines, as if you had actually planned it that way, as if you had stacked up bricks at random and built, by mistake, a lucky star. Lucky, poem by Kirsten Dierking, from Northern Oracle, published by Spout Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 22 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer. He is at the board. Right now it is 34 degrees at the Juno International Airport in downtown. It is beautiful and sunny. We're expecting some snow tomorrow night, 90% precipitation after 9 p.m. Friday night. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host, and in the studio, our next guest is Jim Powell. He's here. He works as the assistant professor at the UAS out the road, our very local and appreciated college, University of Alaska Southeast, and he's here to talk about something that's happening downstairs at 360 in the studios downstairs in the KTOO building. So welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime.
It's always good to come in this building. I'm glad you guys are here.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. So what is going on downstairs at the 360 studios tonight?
Well, we put together a panel.
And we being the University of Alaska Southeast?
Yes, the University of Alaska Southeast, and in particular the program that I teach in, which is a master's degree in public administration. So we kind of cover a lot of ground. And what we did, and we thought about this last semester when the campaign was going on, okay, the national campaign. And what's going to happen tonight is there's going to be a panel. Four people on the panel. We're going to talk about political leadership and civility. And we have three distinguished elected officials and a renowned journalist. The three elected officials are Senator Berta Gardner from Anchorage, Senator Peter Michicki from Soldotna, and Mayor Mike Navarre from Kenai.
And the journalist? So,
and the journalist is Mr. Dermot Cole, who is well-known.
That's great. So it's tonight at 5:30. And what can people expect? Is it a forum where the journalist is going to ask questions?
Mm-hmm. We're going to start with introductions, and hopefully we'll have an audience so we can take questions from the audience. But we're going to I'll pose questions to them for about a half an hour, and hopefully that will inspire and interest folks through a lot of discussion. I don't think any of the panelists are shy, and they're all leaders within their bodies. In fact, the state senate, there's a minority leader, majority leader. Mr. Cole has been around, and he has a reputation of really digging into things on both sides of the aisle. So that's good. And Mike Navarre, Mayor Mike Navarre, used to be majority leader in the House years ago. He served in the House 12 years when he was pretty young. And now he's been mayor for, I think it's his second or third term in Kenai. So these guys, they're very experienced. And what we're looking for is this whole idea of civility really was pronounced, let's say, during the national campaign. And we thought, do we do it different up here? I think we do. Well, how do we do that? And where is civility? Where does it happen? Does it happen? Where are those pressure points? How do you do civility? How do you define civility?
Well, that's my question. So if you're just joining us, Jim Powell, Professor Jim Powell, is here. He's He teaches at the Master's Program of Public Administration at the University of Alaska Southeast. Tonight, there'll be a panel of political leadership and civility downstairs at 5:30. So let's talk about it. Since you work in that, you teach graduate students public administration.
Right.
To you, what is civility?
Well, many people have defined it, and we're actually starting the discussion because we want to get right into it. We want to see how it's used. We're going to offer a definition that other theorists have come up with. And comes down to three or four kind of characteristics, you might say. And I could read those. It's really respect for others is equals. If you had one few words to say, it's respect for others is equals. That kind of encapsulates everything. But it's also, I would say, tolerance for non-harmful views and behavior of which we do not approve of ourselves. So there's a tolerance word in there. Willingness to subject one's own views to examination, to hear out others, those views. Those are really important things when you're in public office and amongst all of us. I mean, I think we live in a very special place, in a very special state, but in a very special town, because the expression I used, we have forced civility in Juneau. You have to say hi to people, even if you don't want to. I mean, and I like it. I like the hi, but you do, and that's nice to have that communications. And then when you're, it's kind of like you go down to a stop sign. It's like, no, you go first. No, you go first. You know, we stop. If you do that in another, I remember I was in Palo Alto when Beth went back for a fellowship at Stanford. My God, I stopped more than 3 seconds. I did an experiment. 1, 2, 3, they're beeping their horn. If you beep the horn here, you'd probably get out of the car and go, are you okay? You know, so there's a lot of civility that's practiced here. And it would be nice to discuss that, but also where it really comes to pressure, where people have different views. And that's where it happens, is in the legislature and in the media. And that's why we pick these people. They're all known for working across the aisle. And we want to hear about it. I want them to describe it and talk about it. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to have a discussion. And then we're going to open it up to the folks in Juneau. And then it's actually streamed, too. So we're going to get hopefully questions from folks out in the hitherland that are watching the stream.
Okay. So that's Jim Powell. He just gave up a definition of civility, which wasn't necessarily his, but for the purposes of this conversation tonight. And what I heard was respect each other as equals. So right. There was respect, but each other as equals, not just, mm-hmm. you know, play respect,
right.
Tolerance, and also self-examination of your own views is what I heard. So let's talk about leadership. So we're talking about civility. That was the definition for tonight's conversation, so everyone's on the same page. What about a definition about political leadership?
Well, I think it's a different brand of leadership. I mean, leadership is described in a lot of different ways, and we teach leadership actually at UAS in some of our classes. And I taught a class in political leadership and civility last fall.
And he's not quite done with it. He wants to go to class tonight to have the debate go on with the subject matter experts. I love that.
Yeah. You get into things, you don't realize how deep you go. Political leadership, I think, is a little bit different because I think political leadership really is the apex for civility, because that's where in any kind of body, political body, because we're elected officials, you're elected because you're representing different points of view. And that's when you have the pressure point of political leadership. I think in civility, that's where you can express civility. And that's where I think it's needed. I remember John McCain, you know, in the elections when Obama was running. Oh, my God. I mean, he was saying, okay, crowd, let's not get personal about President Obama. I mean, and he used civility right then. And I think he's probably using it now, you know. So I think that there's a real need. There's probably a special need because we look up to our leaders. And if they're not civil, then, you know, I think that they set tones. In organizations, there's a tone. I worked in agencies. Those commissioners, those heads of agencies are governors. They set tones that is really important. They're models. We hold them, in esteem. So I think that's the connection between civility and political leadership. It's really important for that to happen. And the writing and the literature on civility is about the need for democracy to be civil. Because if we can't discuss, we can't have democracy. Because we need the truth. We need discussion. Democracy is discussion. And if we don't have civility, we don't get to discussion. So we don't have democracy. And those are the connections, I think. But maybe I'm going a little too far there. Anyway.
I'm not so sure. I have another question for you. Letting that just go by. So political leadership and civility, where does the press fit into this? So you were just talking about how, in your opinion, civility and leadership are integral to the democratic process. I paraphrase that.
Absolutely, and that's why, no less political, but Mr. Dermot Cole, being a journalist and author, is very respected, I think, in the state for taking positions on each side of issues. I think it's incredibly responsible. They're incredibly responsible for
the press.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what gets written. I mean, which is incredible right now in the national scene because there seems to be such a tension between our leadership and the press and the media. There's the old saying, I forget who said it years ago, why do you want to get in an argument with a guy that's got a barrel of ink? I don't know. So I think those things are really pushed. But I think it's going to be interesting to hear. I mean, I'm not a journalist so I can't really answer that question, but my observations are that he's going to have something to say about the role of civility in society and the responsibility of the press. But we're going through some different times right now with the press. What's the function of the press? What's the function of, alternative truths? And all of this chatter that's out there and the different types.
What's the responsibility? We're also talking about responsibility for political leadership,
and
civility
in
the press.
I mean, why did we have a new building, in Washington, D.C., the new news building that went up? It's the fifth arm it's the fourth arm of government is the news.
Right.
I mean, well, I don't have to tell you guys that, but I mean, it really is. I mean, it's important. It's as important as the three other branches, because we depend upon it for truth and for information, for all kinds of things. So.
Okay. So tonight, 5:30 downstairs at the 360 Studios, Political Leadership and Civility. Jim Powell, works with the University of Alaska Southeast's Management Program, Public Administration. And he will be very much a part of this debate.
I'll be moderating the discussion.
Okay. I let you go, so, Alaska always kind of dances to its own beat. So while, you brought it up before that, it's hard to even pinpoint political leadership and civility for all of Alaska, nevertheless, all of America. But how do you feel that Alaska differs from the 48 in this realm, in the political leadership civility?
I think there's a couple of things. There's a couple of sayings. You're never more than one person away from the governor. I think it's accountability. We're still small. Mm-hmm. I feel it when I go home. I mean, my family in Northern New York State is so far from politics. They're active. I mean, they vote, but there's not that connection. Of course, I'm on the other end of the spectrum as far as being active in politics or have been, but still, you feel it. There's more accountability, and that's a good thing.
Right. 3 degrees of separation instead of 6.
There we go. Yeah.
In Alaska.
So I think that's important. I think there's still a spirit here in Alaska about politics, too. I think we still want to be involved. I haven't done any surveys on that, but just an observation or instinct.
Mm-hmm.
I want to believe that, too. However, I will say one thing in Juneau, which we're fighting right now, we're trying to figure out. We have one district precinct here, Lemon Creek, that has the lowest voter turnout in the whole state. So we think we're pretty cool down in Juneau, but we've got some work to do as far as getting people involved and the ones that are maybe disenfranchised with government. So we've got our own work to do. So anyway, but I think in general, I think there's more accountability, and that leads to good things as far as politics.
That sounds great. Well, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Jeff.
One last question tonight: Political Leadership and Civility downstairs, 360, and it's streaming, right?
Yes.
KTOO.org.
Yes.
Okay, great. So you could check it out online. Thanks for coming by. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Are listening to Juneau Afternoon. It is Thursday. That means I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and it is almost 20 minutes to the hour, 34 degrees. We're expecting snow tonight, and snow tomorrow night. Our next guest is Mary Soroki. She is here to talk about the Girl Scout auction. This happens almost every year. It happens every year for years, and it's one of those iconic events where all the goodies go for a great cause.
And, I guess the first thing that I'd like to do is to thank the amazing businesses in Juneau that donated to the auction. This is the Girl Scouts' 25th auction. The first years were a little small, where I think we mostly sold things to each other.
Would you like a Girl Scout cookie? Yes, I would.
Would you like this basket you bought last year? So we have graduated to something much more glamorous than that, and we hold this event in the Jack. It starts at 6 p.m. on Saturday. We have, this year for auction, we have 5 condos, so you can bid on an opportunity to stay in a one-bedroom condo in Oceanside, Washington, D.C., Hawaii, or Mexico.
Okay, sign me up.
Abby's Catering is providing the food, and everybody knows that she does such an amazing job. So there's plenty of food. More on the hearty appetizer side, lots of finger food, but it makes a wonderful meal. There's a no-host bar. The room is set up nicely. We have a large selection of silent auction items. We have placemats and napkins, a set of 10 with Christmas fabric. We've got Longenberger baskets. We've got a Neil Slotnick bowl. We've got jewelry, gift certificates to the Island Pub, to the Capital Inn. Just an amazing amount of opportunity to get some very good values on things.
It sounds great. So the doors open at 6. It's at the Jack. It's Saturday. How much are tickets to get in?
Tickets are $40. You can purchase them at the Jack, or you can purchase them at Hearthside Bookstores.
All the proceeds go to the Girl Scouts?
All the proceeds go to the Girl Scouts, and the goal is to help girls get to camp. And, you know, here in Juneau, we just have day camps. The overnight camp at Toga Woods is in Wasilla. So it takes a little more resources if you want to go to overnight camp. And our goal is to make sure that no girl in Southeast Alaska who wants to go to camp doesn't get to camp.
That sounds great. That sounds great. And I've heard wonderful things about Toga Woods program.
Toga Woods is the iconic camp. It's a little tent shelters. There's a rustic lodge. The dishes are cracked and chipped. You get to use outhouses and slightly warm showers, and there's canoeing. You see bears coming through. But it really is that opportunity where young girls are learning how to interact with a whole set of people. They have to be in a tent. They have to learn how to deal with various people. They have to do chores.
They have to be away from home.
You have to be away from home. They really get an opportunity to grow up in a really safe environment where they do that. And it's all girls. There's a climbing tower. There's crafts. It's just amazing.
Sounds great. So we can't talk about the Girl Scout auction without talking about your fabulous auctioneer. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes. We have Jesse Keel and we have Chris Snell Chris Snell are our auctioneers. And Jesse has done this for probably 8 to 10 years for us, and he's just amazing.
He's a fabulous auctioneer.
Yeah,
he
just really brings the audience into it. He knows so many people that he can make that eye contact and kind of encourage you to maybe go
another $5.
It's just $5 more, Mary. It's really all you need to do.
Exactly. These auctions are great place to support a great cause, go out and meet some new people, hang out with the people you know, and, walk away with things that normally you wouldn't even think of even purchasing.
One of the other things that we've been purchasing over the last few years are those tourist items that, if you have family coming to town and you want them to get up on the ice fields, we've got ice field trips, we've got Ward Air trips to Taku, we've got Allen Marine, just an amazing array of opportunities from the generous businesses here in Juneau who support Girl Scouts. We've got dinner for four on a Princess cruise ship.
Sounds great.
With the wine.
Yeah, sounds great.
Sounds great, doesn't it?
It does. Thank you, Kirby. That sounds wonderful.
Exactly.
All right, so you heard it here. Girl Scout auction, 25 years of Girl Scout auction, and all the money goes to helping girls from Southeast get up to that week-long camp.
Yep.
Up in the interior. And $40
tickets. $40
tickets.
You'll get an amazing amount of food. You can purchase some beer and wine.
Exactly. And the Girl Scout Board of Directors here in Juneau have been working really hard on this. They've gotten donations. They've gotten great centerpieces.
Yes. From a special troop.
Full disclosure, my daughter's troop made them, but I had nothing to do with the execution. Everyone knows I'm handicraft impaired. Anyway, thanks for coming in and thanks for all you do.
Hey, thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. It's a calm winter morning. The lake is still. What is that sound? Ah, the cackling, grunting, and croaking of American coots calling to one another. Coots are plump, chicken-like water birds, very dark gray. They settle onto lakes and estuaries, forming rafts of hundreds, even thousands of birds. They like to feed on aquatic vegetation, and sometimes they lumber ashore to nibble at grasses and agricultural crops. Here come a few now. Check out the yellow-orange legs and feet. Look carefully, and you'll see an unusual adaptation, not the usual webs. Instead, coots have lobed toes to help them swim and maneuver underwater. Although they are excellent swimmers, coots are awkward and clumsy flyers. To get airborne, they require long running takeoffs. There are some now, trying to take flight, flapping their wings and slapping their lobed toes against the surface of the water. All that effort usually produces only short flights, within 20 feet of the surface. Already, they're settling back onto the water. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
The Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum is a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting the goals and activities of the Juneau Douglas City Museum. Invest in your community art and history with your 2017 membership. Learn more at JuneauMuseumFriends.org. Admission to the City Museum is free through April, courtesy of community sponsors. This message brought to you by Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum.
It is 14 minutes to the hour. Our next guest, Jeff and I. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer. He is at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Our final guest, as always, is Nancy DeCherney, here to talk about what's going on in the art scene in the capital city. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. Well, we have a whole bunch of stuff to do, of course. I'm starting this evening at 5. The Travel Juneau people are doing something called Marketing Momentum. 2017's ultimate marketing tool. Christy Nami's going to talk about why Instagram is her go-to marketing tool, and I think there might still be tickets. You can call over there at 586-1753. It's over at the Hangar Ballroom, and you get complimentary light appetizers and a drink and some tips so you can play with your Instagram. Who doesn't love Instagram?
You mean you get, like, food and a glass of something and you get to play on your phone?
Yeah. Yeah. Weird. And then, you know, of course, then at 5:30 we can talk about political leadership and civility, which you've already talked about.
We have.
I think Instagram falls into the civil situation. There's also some, I think, dancing and karaoke and stuff going on tonight. Tomorrow there's breakfast burritos at the Salvation Army for $5 from 11 to 1 p.m.
Fun.
Do a little benefit, yeah. And there's the fireside lecture is about coping with weather. I think we should fly some, like, Oregonians up. Or
you're right. We just came up from Ashland where it was raining, and they were all shell-shocked.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And?
So this is at 6:30 and 8, and those are free, and there's a lecture with a video of wildlife coping with the weather. So you do wonder sometimes, how do the birds and little animals keep up with this stuff? So anyway, it's Bob Armstrong talking about that, and those are free. And on Saturday, there's a canvas building two-day class, how to make your own canvas. Canvases. Inari Kailanen is working on that at the Canvas. There's Mardi Gras at the Nugget Mall, and there's makeup, dress-up, photo booth, shoebox, float decorating. You get to dress up your animals and have photos taken with them. It sounds like a lot of fun. There's going to be Mardi Gras food, including shrimp po' boys and king cake and all sorts of stuff. Go on out to Mardi Gras or to the Nugget Mall from 11 to 6. There's the Great American Songbook Series over at the State Museum. The Juneau Cabaret is doing this in collaboration with the museum, and I think this one is Duke Ellington.
That's what I heard, 2 o'clock, right?
Yes, yeah. And it's, or 1:30.
1:30,
yes, and it's a really lovely sort of thing over at the State Museum. Nice opportunity to see the museum, too. Then you can roll from there over to Bullwinkle's, where they're having live acoustic bluegrass music on Saturdays. There's Bacon Fest, but I'm sorry, you'll just have to cook your bacon at home.
All
they're sold out. Yeah.
No more bacon.
No more Bacon Fest, yes.
And good luck finding some in the store.
Yes. It'll smell nice in the neighborhood.
It will.
There's the Girl Scout auction, and you were just discussing that, I believe. It's a wonderful opportunity to support activities for young women. West Side Story.
Let's talk about West Side Story. So that's a big collaboration, correct?
It is, and I'm not sure that I know all the details. It's what used to be Opera to Go, and they have brought in some artists from out of town, and it's quite the thing. You can get tickets. There's a thing in the paper today about it. So you should definitely try. It's such a wonderful play or musical. It's exciting that it's being performed here. So. That's Saturday and I think maybe Sunday too.
And then the following weekend.
Yeah, so, but again, don't put these things off because then somehow the days go by and then all of a sudden you go, oh, rats. On Monday, there's Skiers Friday over at the Hangar, but the big news is the Gospel Guys are back in town.
Let's talk about the Gospel.
The Gospel Guys, yeah, they come in on Monday. The workshop starts Monday at 6:30 at the Jack. You have rehearsals 6:30 to 8:30 Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They take a little break on Friday because it's Motown. Oh, yes, Motown for Our Town. And I think this year Jocelyn Miles, Al Dunn, and Alyssa Fisher are competing for the crown.
That Shona one, yes.
So it's a lot of fun. You know, oddly enough, there's people who don't really know Motown songs.
Nancy and I are going to sing you some right now.
Heard it through the grapevine. So anyway, but
which is a good song for Juno.
Yes, it's how we do things. And then on Sunday there will be. I mean, we're getting past our week, but the gospel thing concludes on Sunday the 5th with two celebrations, wonderful music, and in between the two celebrations we'll be at this wonderful soul food dinner on the ground picnic that the Black Awareness folks are cooking up. Fried chicken, homemade potatoes. Anyway, but that we diverse. And it start off with coming to the gospel.
Well, let's talk about that in case people don't know what the gospel workshop. So it's open to community members.
Yes, you need to have no previous experience. It's Reverend Bobby Lewis and Eustace Johnson are from Harlem, New York. They have a pastoral setting there. They are pastor, whatever you call it. Anyway, and they come every year to Fairbanks and do it up there as well. And then they come down here or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
They've been coming here, I think this might be the 5th or 6th year.
And last year, how many people
were there? Oh, there's like 100 and some odd people on the stage. And I want to say, I never participate. I'm always producing it. But what I can see is the people's faces as they're singing. And the just absolute joy that I see on people's face. Like I said, you don't have to have any experience. You just need to want to sing.
Just
come and sign up. And it's done sort of call and response, and mm-hmm. it's just amazing. The whole thing is a wonderful, wonderful, powerful thing. The songs are chosen to sort of tell the story, the Black history story of the diaspora from Africa to Martin Luther King times. But all of the music is just, it's really powerful, and I think you'll find it very rewarding. You were thinking you might do it this year, and I think maybe you should.
Now everyone shouldn't go running screaming from the home saying, oh no, she's going to run.
Yeah, no. Everyone will be there with you. So do call and get signed up for that. There's people who've canceled things just so they can come back and be here for this.
I saw it last year along with the Gospel King and Queen, and that was great. So they just call your number, 586-2787?
Yeah, go online, go to Hearthside Books, yes. Call me, yes. So other things, you know, we're coming up to Shrove Tuesday, is on Tuesday, and there's a pancake dinner at the Douglas Methodist Church, $10 fundraising event, masks included, pancakes, build your own mountain with ice cream, fruit syrup, and lots of whipped cream. It will be a party.
Whoa.
Who doesn't like pancakes for dinner? That's at 5 to 7 over at the Douglas Methodist Church. Out at the Auk Bay Elementary School, the kids are doing a wax museum of the fifth graders, historical figures who've made a positive contribution to our world. So you can come and enjoy that from 6 to 7 at Auk Bay. There's the Last Chance Jazz Band at McGivney's from 8 to 10, which is also a Mardi Gras party happening out there, in case you hadn't noticed. Mardi Gras must be happening.
I guess it's Mardi Gras week.
Yes, it is. Let's see if there's anything else. Oh, yes. Wednesday is Wildlife Wednesdays. The humpback whales are smarter than you think. Well, we knew that. I mean, gee whiz. But so it's quite a week, and it's gearing up to
be very, very smart. They're really smart.
Yes.
They never dump a kayak. I think that's very impressive.
They know what they're doing. So anyway, if you want to see the details to all these sorts of things, it's at jahc.org, and we encourage you to come out for almost everything.
That sounds
great.
Sign
up now.
You know, you would think that Nancy and her crew after Wearable Arts, they'd be sitting in their office with their feet up, eating bonbons, patting each other, giving each other high fives.
We don't have time for that.
On to the next. They've got their little sneakers on, and they're zipping off to the next.
It's a whirlwind. I know. We've got the whole gospel thing, and then after that, we have the Kahualui Hawaiian swing band coming up in March, too.
Fun.
Yeah. Dance, dance, dance.
There you
go. It's
going to
be fun.
All right. Well,
thank you,
Nancy, and to your whole crew for making our capital city so vibrant.
Thank you.
All righty. So here we are. It is 5 minutes to the hour. Once again, Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. We are going to be looking at the weather, and it is glorious right now. It's high near 35. Tonight it's going to drop down to 22. Tomorrow we're looking at mostly sunny again, a high near 38. And then Friday night, snow, mainly after 9 p.m. Chance of precipitation is 90%. And then Saturday, there's a chance of rain and snow, partly sunny with a high near 40. Chance of precipitation is 40%. Well, thank you for joining us. Tomorrow you want to tune in to Juno Afternoon because Andy Klein always hosts on Friday, and it's always a party with Andy. And he'll be talking about what's going on at Perseverance Theater. Then we'll get an update about what's going on with the Catholic Community Services. They have a whole wide array of services available to the whole community. And then Bob Armstrong will be here to talk about his Friday night Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center lecture. So all that and more, you could always tune in to KTOO.org and listen on demand to anything that interests you. So thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
I thought I was fine, but I was surprised to hear I had high blood pressure. Now I've got it under control.
I still feel young, so I didn't think I needed cancer screenings. I'm just glad we caught it early.
I feel great, but my doctor said my blood sugar put me at risk for diabetes.